Time once again for Truth About Markets on Resonance FM.
In London with Max and Stacy, what are the most shocking headlines you've seen on today's front pages?
Well, honey, the shocking headlines, I'm looking at Twitter. I see there's a lot of outrage that the...
I think of Twitter as the place for outrage.
Right. Well, it looks like, here's the headline, Europe's banking regulator to relax cap on bonuses for highest paid staff plans to lift pay restrictions from 12,000 bankers have angered campaigners. So the bankers are giving themselves a raise.
Yes, the bankers are giving themselves a raise. And, we knew this would happen. This happens every single time during this financial crisis or any threat of any sort of regulation in any way or restrictions on any bankers or the fact that they might go to prison for any or actually even just be dared to be charged with any crime. Then the lobbyists, the bank lobbyists come in and within months it all disappears. But they do get the headline, so I'm sure enough of the population thinks that there's been a cap and that we're restricting bankers and that we're, you know, restricting their pay. So we got those headlines, but most people won't see the follow-up or connect that it's actually, there is no change.
No. So I guess there was some outrage about it on the Twitter folks, you know, about how this was not an all. What else is going on? I'm trying to figure this out.
There's also the story of unemployment, but homelessness is soaring. It's up 60% in London alone in the last 2 years. So the funny thing, of course, is that the government denies it has anything to do with their policies of the bedroom tax or of the... the restrictions on building. So the fact that most of the homes are being sold to, you know, investors overseas that are looking to launder their money from their own governments. Sudden rise in homelessness blamed on housing shortage and the bedroom tax. The number of homeless people is rising sharply under the twin pressures of the shortage of housing and the impact of government's welfare reforms, according to a new study. Revealed that the number of sleeping rough has risen by 6% in England this year and by 13% in London. There's been a 10% increase in those housed temporarily, including a 14% rise in the use of bed and breakfast. The report explicitly blames the government's welfare cuts for compounding the problems, but they emphatically deny that the reforms contributed to the return of homelessness.
Yeah, that's in denial. They're in denial about it. Funny, you know, how the forces of denial work in this context. They print lots of money that goes into a few pockets who then channel that money into speculation and real estate and artwork and things like that. And the money doesn't end up in the economy as a whole. So people end up becoming homeless and sleeping on the street, but there's no connection there between the policy and the result being homeless. Now, when, you know, the thing, the obvious question is, if all the public institutions are being looted through financial reengineering, what eventually the homeless people, there's just going to be too many of them. So What's the government going to do then? Workhouses, maybe.
Well, once again, I think the answer comes in a form of a Matt Taibbi piece in today's Rolling Stone, which is truly remarkable, is looking at the city, Camden, New Jersey, which has a violence per capita equivalent to Honduras and Somalia, somewhere between those two. It's a former industrial town like Detroit. There were a lot of really good jobs. RCA Records, I guess, were there. there were all sorts of ships built there. You know, Campbell's Soup used to be there, their final factory left in the 90s. So there are no jobs. But it's total chaos. It's kind of like what you see in that TV series, The Wire. And then 3 years ago, Chris Christie got rid of the local police force. And there was a period of about a year or two where there was just basically no police. And they took over the streets. And now they've brought in the county sort of special police force. Basically, it's outsiders with the military sort of equipment. So they've laced the entire city, this area, with all sorts of surveillance. So every single square inch of the city has these high-resolution cameras watching everything. They could see everything. And they have all sorts of heat sensor robots in the area. And they also have those sound detectors to detect exactly to the meter where a gunshot has happened.
Uh-huh.
So it's these outside sort of remote, it's a new sort of feudalism. It's just bizarre that, you know, the elite becomes safer and safer in this more and more unequal society where they don't have to have any sort of, safe from like the consequences of their own actions and their own theft.
Mm-hmm. So it's they just built this huge open air prison, apparently. Yes. So it's so the solution is, so the Camden, a town like this in New Jersey, the industrial base is looted, destroyed, and privatized and securitized and stolen. And the result is the thousands of people there are abandoned. And it's cheaper, instead of waiting around for them to commit crimes and have police force to put them in jail, they just get rid of the police and institute a robotic police surveillance open-air prison, I guess, is the solution.
Yes, crowd control. They call it crowd control. They want to keep the crowd in control. Now, some of the stories I was reading from the cops that had been on the beat for decades, it sounds pretty remarkable. I mean, that they would often get chased by mobs there when they went to arrest somebody, and like they would be surrounded by women like beating them and stuff like that, and it sounded pretty scary. And their patrol cars would be stolen from them. So I mean, it seemed like Mogadishu, you know, like the craziness you see in third world. But I think you're seeing, well, you know, there is a sense that on the one hand, a lot of, as Matt Taibbi points out in here, that there are a lot of, you know, the abandoned white areas are like more into storing all these foods and their guns and hiding in their property, and that there's going to be Armageddon and apocalypse and a Mad Max sort of world. But so far, I'm halfway through the article. What it's sounding like is the elite, the masters that be, of course, they don't care that you don't have any jobs because they can just throw you some cans of Campbell's soup. But the thing they don't want is chaos and total that spills out into their area, because Camden kept on spilling out into Philadelphia and places like that. But they can surround you in these open air prisons with surveillance and keep you in these pens. So I'm not sure if the Mad Max sort of world will be anything but local.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The forum cities into so that they're on permanent lockdown, open air prison situation, and it's this type of thing is spreading, though. I mean, in the U.S., right? There's everywhere. No region is immune. They've got the extreme top and the extreme bottom. So that whole middle part that is the fabric of a society is disintegrating. But you can't have that kind of balanced society without institutions like education, health, even religious institutions to perform tasks to promote social integration and social harmony, but all of these institutions are being looted and gutted, and the only thing left are the kind of the what we might call the market fundamentalists, you know, the folks that have an ideology that it's okay to channel trillions and trillions of free money to an overlord group and then let anarchy reign everywhere else.
Yeah, there's a great piece also out in the news about Canada, about this disappearing middle, the middle class. And the article is called From Middle Class to Minimum Wage with No Way Back. As inequality has increased, our optimism has been replaced by pervasive dark pessimism. And it's a pretty, it's from Ecos Research, EKOS. And they do this survey and they found that since the start of the 2000s, Canadians identifying themselves as middle class has declined from 70% to 60%. What this means is not something that can be calibrated simply by the metrics of median income statistics. It's not really about numbers and the bromides being offered by politicians in the U.S. and Canada about a healthy middle class being good for society. Miss the point. Middle class is a state of mind, an emotional state, a feeling of optimism, a feeling of belonging to the great swathe of Canadian society that has been resolutely marching forward in the sunshine for decades. It is an important element of social cohesion. When the level of inequality rises in tandem with a stagnant economy, which is what is happening in Canada, the relationship between income and class identity becomes stronger. Inequality, above all else, is a profound social circumstance, a subjective sense of one's status, both in comparison to others and in relation to what one expects from oneself. Thus, especially in rich societies, a substantial income loss in an environment of inequality is more than apt to be construed as an assault on class identity. So the article goes on to point out, like this abandoned city of Camden, New Jersey, they're abandoning their own belief that they're in the middle class and that they belong. And it's pretty remarkable. They've done this study for decades, and the group self-identifying as wealthy has remained exactly 5 or 6%. It just fluctuates between that. And it's the middle class section that has plummeted, while the working class, self-identifying working class, has increased. And of course, we all know the stories of you know, people who have doctorate degrees or master's degrees, and they're working at Starbucks or McDonald's. And this is what they cover. This guy who had a good job, and he thought he would always have a good job. He lost the job at 46 or 47. He wasn't stressed at all, because he assumed he would find another good job because he was part of the middle class and educated. And a year and a half later, when he was having to sell his house and he realized that he was no longer able to get a job and he was working at Dunkin' Donuts and places like that, then he abandoned the belief that he was even in the middle class, and now he's just happy to be in the working class.
You know, it's part of, I think, a realization of a failure of modernity. So there was, for a couple of hundred years, this since the Enlightenment, an idea of modernity that technology and education and institutional democratic organizing principles could create societal benefits, but I think it goes back to that whole 9/11 episode, in that I think for millions of people around the world, they realized that this whole idea of a modern world was false, that all of the terror of the pre-modern world and of the dark ages was really still with us. And I think a lot of people just on a psychic level just realized that there is no modern state. There's just been this dark ages. think people are kind of waking up to the fact that everything since the Enlightenment was a dream, and that their natural state is to toil for dark forces.
Well, and then the remarkable thing here is they point out that in the 2012 book, Why Nations Fail: The Origins of Power, Prosperity, and Poverty, from an economist, Darren Acemoglu of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, argues that societies fail when they move from an inclusive to an extractive economy, meaning an economy, quote, designed to extract incomes and wealth from one subset of society, the masses, to benefit a different subset, the governing elite. Now, of course, you're going to hear that and you're going to be reminded of the Republican Party, of Fox News, the Tea Party, and they say the exact opposite. They believe that it's the masses who are taking from the governing elite, that are extracting from the governing elite. And of course, totally misidentifying the actual situation and the exact opposite of what it is, which is by design through the propaganda. And, many of those, the Tea Party will say that they are, grassroots, and I'm sure they are. I'm sure they're just susceptible to the propaganda. They're self-identifying. They don't realize as a moron, but that's what they are. They're more of a simpleton. But this is, a guy who's looked at hundreds of societies across the generations, and the ones that failed, it's always because they've turned into one of the common features is that they turn into an extractive economy.
Humans have become charmless. There's just nothing charming about the human race anymore. I think it used to be an amusing quirk of evolution, these walking, bipedal, thinking, sentient beings who would create flying machines. But they've just become too much of a blight. I saw another story about a tuna being auctioned off in Japan for $600,000, or oh no, it's $1.7 million. So this idea that you can catch tuna fish, put them in a freezer, and then fish the remaining tuna into extinction to raise the price of your stock of tuna is beyond just cruel and unusual. This is beyond just a plague. This is something altogether more horrible, and people in these towns are influenced by this horridness, and it corrupts them on a cellular level, where they are hearing voices from places that we thought we escaped from. The deepest bowels of hell are now channeling their way to the surface through the psychosis of millions who are being abused daily by the bankster terrorists ruling at the top.
Well, speaking of the bankster terrorist at the top, there's basically everybody who's at the very top ends up being a bankster terrorist. I tweeted to Russell Brand yesterday because he said regarding this Comic Relief investigation by Panorama, where they revealed just shocking information. First of all, just the 100 million pounds that they have in cash on hand. So you give them these donations, and they're just speculating with it, basically. They're putting it into the stock market, and they're one of their biggest holdings being BAE. So they're telling you to give them money to help poor kids in Africa, in war-torn countries. You got to help them and feel guilty about it. And if you give us £10, you'll feel better. And it'll make all the problems go away. And the fact that you contributed £1,000 in taxes towards those wars that deprive these people of their resources.
But well, let's we should do is I read the story, and yeah, I saw some little tweet action with Russell Brand. So my first thought was that Russell Brand would not be in a position to go against the prevailing Lovie line here, which is that the comic relief people, it's a force of good, because the comic relief TV show and fund have become a big economic bonanza for everyone involved. And so he's somebody who, on an opportunistic level, is not going to bite the hand that feeds him. I mean, he's very critical of things that would have absolutely no consequence whatsoever if they turned around and criticized Russell Brand. So his targets are extraordinarily easy. If the target is something like comic relief, which is the wellspring of his fortune, then he, of course, would approach that with kid gloves and not be in any way critical on any meaningful level, because he is, like most others, a hypocrite. Now, I believe that on our show Kaiser Report, we might want to include a Russell Brand on the report and talk about the hypocrisy and the devastating revelation that he's fronting an organization that is hypocritically taking money from people under the wrongful guise of assisting those in need and redirecting those funds into the pockets of a company like BAE, which is part of that terrorist banker's elite that is causing fire and brimstone to erupt in the souls of the majority of those who are being kept out, even though they wear a red nose. So Russell Brand could be entering comedy hell here in a moment. This week, we could be teeing him up to get flayed on TV, like we do with the Jamie Dimon. It could be ripe. It could Russell could be ripe to get the Kaiser Report full Monty.
Well, here's what he tweeted. He said, "Comic Relief is run by beautiful, devoted people. If you want to look for corrupt a-holes, there's a lot better options." I wrote back, "That's what they said about the Catholic Church in Ireland, i.e., that these people were beautiful, devoted people. This priest would not be doing this." And of course, for decades, young children were abused repeatedly because the population refused to believe that these devoted people.
Well, it also speaks to economic illiteracy. So when Russell Brand was on Newsnight talking to Jeremy Paxman, and he's talking about the corruption of society and the wealth disparity, his fallback position is to talk about something called, quote unquote, redistribution, which is a term associated with economic policies and political policies of for to keep this fairly simple, let's call that socialism. And it's a very crude and blunt tool to try to cover for what should be a much more detailed conversation about how the economy works. But instead, we get this site, this word redistribution, as a cure-all, as a catch-all, that this is the way that we can stop this horrible redistribution of wealth from the many to the few. And then a week later or 2 weeks later, it's pointed out to him that Comic Relief, a group he's affiliated with, is involved in a major financial scandal. As we just described, but because he's financially illiterate on a basic level, he doesn't see or can't articulate or speak on in any intelligent way about these financial crimes that are being committed right under his red nose. And so, again, whether it's Bob Geldof or Bono or Russell Brand, they make these huge these proclamations and these make these gestures, but they have no education on the issues of which they speak. And I've made the same point about Greenpeace or Russell Brand or Bob Geldof or Bono. Or unfortunately, they need to go to school and learn something about economics first before they do more damage than good. So the net net Is Russell Brand doing more damage than good by being a front man for an organization that's pouring money into unequivocally terrorist British aerospace and engineering corporation that runs gulags, that tortures people, that kills and maims, and they're involved in genocide? Is that really not the worst of the worst? Instead of going after Jeremy Paxman, who's dribbling on in an incoherent, senile way on a nightly basis on Newsnight and has nothing to contribute anyway. So he's looking completely in the wrong direction, and he's doing more harm than good. But he'll say he's only trying to make a joke and be entertaining. And, you know, this is the problem when you have comedians, whether it's Jon Stewart or Russell Brand, taking on serious issues, is that when it's pointed out that their knowledge isn't there, they just have that fallback position of saying, well, I'm just trying to be entertaining. I'm just trying to point the finger. I really don't know what I'm talking about. And that causes a lot of damage.
Well, then again, going back to this item here, what he tweeted, there was a response from Emma Freud to this. Emma Freud is related to the Freud family. I don't know which one her father is, Lucian Freud or Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud was her grandfather. She's also her great uncle or great great uncle, the founder of modern propaganda. But she runs Comic Relief. She's the definition of a lovey, but an elite lovey. Like there are a lot of fake loveys, which are part of the court. They're actually just part of the court of being in the eye of Emma Freud and wants to be. I think she's also married to the guy from Love Actually, Richard Curtis, the director. So that brings me, Emma Freud, remember. So it brings me to this article in The Independent from the guy who directed this Comic Relief expose. He wrote, "How we revealed bad investments by Comic Relief and the comedy establishment turned against us." So he mentions that Comic Relief's books were published in 2009, their financial accounts, and it was a member of the public, Andrew Goodwill, who noticed all these major investments in BAE and alcohol companies and who of their £100 million in cash sitting on the books. So he says the story had been passed over by a dozen or more news desks who told Goodwill they would not attack such a beloved British institution. In 2009, the News of the World wrote up the story, but it was apparently spiked, the rumor in the newsroom being that the Freud-Murdoch nexus was to blame. The charity's co-founder is Emma Freud, whose brother, Matthew, is married to Rupert Murdoch's daughter, Elizabeth. Why it would take another 4 years for the story to come out? I think the media has been scared to criticize the organizations as they do good work and command public trust. This has been, in my view, allowed some of the big charities to see themselves as beyond criticism. So, you know, Russell Brand probably knows Emma Freud very well. They're very well connected in the comedy world. And she probably smells nice. She serves good lunch. Her house is nice. He probably thinks of pleasant things about there. But that's the same thing that happened, you know, with all sort of corrupt organizations. I'm sure that all those Catholic priests, the parents of the children who were being abused, probably saw a humble, gentle man who seemed devoted to helping the poor, and he worked at the food kitchen at Christmas, and he mm-hmm. seemed to care. So, you know, it's his problem, not the victims of this.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, this is really a scandal of epic proportions. I think we should get into it and apply the same scalding comments that we do to the banksters to this entrenched lovey oligopoly. It'd be interesting for the world to understand the lovey oligopoly here in the Britain establishment and the damage that they do and the support of corporations involved in the financial genocide and terrorism. I think people would be find this very interesting. I'd like to see us branch out into that.
And so this director said, like, their first response upon hearing that they were going to be, there was this expose coming, is they hired this power law firm, Harbottle and Lewis, and they deluged the documentary company with legal threats for 3 months. And then they started getting threats that we ourselves, that we were taking desperately needed support from children in Africa. Now you see this over and over, that it, this sort of thing always excuses all sorts of corrupt, violent, aggressive, imperial behavior. Whether it's like, we've got to go kill a whole bunch of Iraqis because think of the children of under Saddam Hussein. Mm-hmm. Think of the women in Afghanistan. Or you get the same thing. Think of the jobs. So, yes, we may be dumping huge quantities of toxic material into your water supply. And yes, your children may die at the age of 8 from lung cancer. But think of the jobs. Do you really want this family to lose their jobs? Because if they do lose their job, they're never going to be able to pay for treatment for their 8-year-old child with lung cancer.
We just saw this with the Cy Hirschberg story reveal. Cy Hirsch, the reveal that Obama committed war crimes in Syria by essentially aiding and abetting sarin gas. And at the time, of course, it was the children who were being gassed to death. And now, 6 months later, it turns out it was under Obama's direct orders. It's always about the children.
Well, what happened is, we all know that sarin gas attack. What Cy Hirsch's study revealed, what his investigation revealed in his speaking to insiders, was that though Obama and Cameron presented it as that their investigations found that there was no other alternative, there was no other option but Assad, that it had to have been his sarin gas. He's saying that the insiders, the intelligence community, was like presenting to Obama and to his national security directive that there were, in fact, that the rebels had sarin, and that this could have easily just as well been them. So, but the fact that that was never presented to the public as that's an option to consider, that who was the bad guy here.
Well, it is like the, as you point out, the Catholic Church in your tweet. I mean, they have the perception that they're doing good, but underneath there's these rogue priests and a huge number of priests that are engaged in despicable behavior. But they believe that the church collectively is doing so much good on their missionary work, et cetera, that they are beyond reproach. So here you have these lovies who think that they are feeding the African children who are victimized by the colonization of countries like Britain, who I believe has been established their colonial influence in every single country in the history of the world except for 10, reading a report that came out a few months ago. So now they have guilt about all of the exploitation and colonization that they've wreaked onto the globe. So they get a couple of these, dancing, joke-telling, tattoo and piercing-wearing folks to sing and dance their way on TV, wearing a funny red nose, and let's all help the children that we've been brutalizing and destroying for decades. Then it turns out that was a front, that's a fraud, that's a complete misrepresentation, they've been lying. And then you have Russell Brand saying these are beautiful people doing beautiful things. Well, he's been caught, like Bono's been caught or Geldof's been caught, hoisted by his own petard. You know, he's been caught in his own lovey nightmare. You know, he, because he's financially illiterate, because he can't read a balance sheet or an income statement, he's now been caught red-handed in aiding and abetting an organization that is destroying societies around the world and profiting handsomely from it.
Now, it's really quite a remarkable modern-day Canterbury Tales, because back in 1400, when Chaucer was writing that, there were the equivalent of the Red Nose Day, or the wear this plastic wristband Live Aid Day, is. At the time, people would go on these pilgrimages, And these pilgrimages were just shakedown units. Basically, the priests and all the guys in the church would just shake down people for indulgences. But the people themselves were a variety of various sort of people going on these pilgrimages. Some were completely pious and weren't looking to just feel, well, they were all looking to feel better about themselves. Some with various degrees of sleaziness and self-awareness of that they were just like a Tony Blair sort of guy and wanted to just like feel better about themselves in the community. This is a sort of modern day indulgence that has become a total racket, just like back in the days of Chaucer. So you have all of these, you know, giant nationally aired campaigns to feed the children here or, you know, save those children over there. It's usually about saving children in some location. And yet almost all of the money we find out, like barely any of it ever makes it there. In fact, sometimes none of it makes it to those people, but it feeds an industry of these sort of, maybe they're not as, maybe they don't realize that they're corrupt. Maybe those priests back in the day of Chaucer didn't. Maybe they really felt like that they were doing good for these people by taking indulgences from them. Maybe they really thought they were doing something good.
Right. So, okay, they Red Nose Day is aired. They raise millions of pounds. So you take a typical 100-pound donation. 1 pound goes to some kind of bowl of mush that is given to the kid, some starving child somewhere. And 99 pounds goes to the Tomahawk missile the drone strike that's about to wipe out him and his family at a wedding party. So an organization like this Comic Relief, what they want to do is they want to give these children one last meal before they kill them, which is a really, really noble cause, I think. Feed the children something before we kill them. So we want to finance their last meal, because the other 99p of every dollar that we're raising here goes to companies like BAE. They're in the business of genocide and slaughtering poor people because we stole all their natural resources. Thank you, Russell Brand. You're quite the humanitarian.
Don't let this child die on an empty stomach.
Right. Don't let this poor blighter die without a bowl of genetically modified mush from Bob Geldof. And then we're going to hit him with the cruise missile, him and his family, and wipe him out. Because, thank you, Russell Brand. Ha, 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 ha.
And their argument will go that, you know, we have to finance the drone operation to kill him, this child that we've just fed, in order to make them more profits to not allow, you know, we could feed 10 other children with those profits, so that they don't die at an empty stomach. That's their sort of mentality.
That's right. The BAE that helps make the drones to kill the family, they're going to donate 10 times more to Comic Relief next year, because then 10 times more of the number of children will have a nice final meal before BAE kills them. And you see, it just gets better and better every year. More and more children have one last meal before they're murdered by BAE, thanks to Comic Relief.
But that's part of this nexus of the Murdoch thing. He's one of the supreme, you know, propagandists in that he alters the way you view the world. The population, many of them think they're independent, sentient human beings, and they think, oh, I chose to vote for Tony Blair in 1997. That I was the one, like, I made my own decision. It wasn't any influence by the Sun or any of Murdoch's press. It's me, the fierce, independent man with my castle. You know, I'm a guy who can think for myself. Well, obviously you can't. You know, these people shape everything around you in a very it's a sophisticated, you know, we're in a much more sophisticated sort of it's a form of totalitarianism, corporatism.
Well, you mentioned Edward Bernays before in the modern propaganda state, which is the art of persuasion the idea of causing empathy. You know, if you can create empathy, you can persuade people to act against their own interest. And as you were saying, and I've heard from other sources now, all these computers and cell phones, the speaker can be flipped around to turn into a listening device. So if you're having a conversation, let's say you're at the pub and you're saying, hey, what's happening? Yeah, I really like that that car I saw driving by on my way to the pub today. And then you flip on your laptop or your computer, and there's an ad for the car you just mentioned to your friend. So they're listening in to your conversations, purportedly to keep you safe. But then they sell that information to marketers who then stuff ads into your eyeballs, which have been replaced with an iPhone. And then because it's so warm and cuddly, your brain makes the association with mommy's milk and suckling on the teat of humanity. And you reach into your pocket and whip out your plastic credit card with that nice fat payday loan at 5,000% interest rate and waiting to destroy you. And you go buy that car, which of course requires a lot of things like rare earth minerals that are in countries that the poor children are sitting on the earth where the rare earth minerals, and you need the BAE to drop a drone to get those rare earth minerals, and the poor child is going to die. But before they die, we got Russell Brand's going to feed him a bowl of mush first. Thank you, Russell, humanitarian.
You know, I heard another scary thing this week about what they're able to do online. So Facebook is gathering all your thought process, how you present yourself to the world and what you really think, how you present your opinions to the world. So they gather every single thing you type on Facebook. So you might say, you know, I hate Campbell's soup. And that's what you started to write. And then you think better. Well, you don't want to seem like an aggressive person and a nasty person. So maybe you go, I'm not a big fan of Campbell's soup. Mm-hmm. And you might go back and change it to that before you post it to your page. But they know what you really think, what you really wanted to say, and right, what your inner feelings are. And, you know, all of social interaction is, of course, you being your own little propagandist. You're modifying what you're altering what you really, really think and presenting it in a more palatable way. But so there's a sense that they're, you know, they've got this database of people's true inner feelings.
Yeah, well, there's beneath the ego, you know, the id, and these, you talk about Freud, who explored the unconscious and the subconscious mind, are these dark forces of violence and sex, sexual aggression. And so what you're describing there is in the ability of a marketer like Facebook to tap into your trigger-happy Stone Age brain that wants to club people and rape them. Yeah. Essentially, people have these inner kind of thoughts as part of the DNA that we've inherited from millions of years of living out in the wild. So they tap into this now on a more aggressive basis. You mentioned Murdoch. You know, going back 20 or 30 years, it's almost quite crude and quaint now that the way that he introduced Britain to this concept was in the Sun newspaper on page 3 to put a pair of big floppy naked breasts to get the cabbie and the working man and the working Joe and the working stiff to reach for the Sun newspaper and to, you know, reach down into their crotch and touch themselves while they're looking at big floppy breasts brought to them by Rupert Murdoch, who would then convince them that, yeah, go vote for Tony Blair and we'll give you more floppy breasts. So that was a very crude first version of this. But now it's a very much more sophisticated, where it's being harnessed through your social interaction so that the marketers can come back to you and very gently persuade you through empathy-enabled technologies to do things like rape people, kill people, give money to Russell Brand so he can give it to BAE to go kill some poor kid with it. But he'll have a great last meal from Tesco.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is the thing about this financial crisis. You can call it a crisis, but it's a financial crime wave. The exposure of this financial crime, this massive redistribution of wealth that has happened from the masses to a small, small elite. And you see that in, like, if you weren't so filled with propaganda and your actual way you view the world altered to fit the needs of a Murdoch, then you would be able to see that the actual data, the numbers, the raw numbers show that there has been a redistribution, that there has been a huge decline in median income for the bottom 99.9%.
They don't talk to your conscious mind and your on your ego in an obvious way, that where all the data suggests that your actions are killing people. So you have common sense, and you can, on your common sense brain, can understand that if you send hundreds of drones into countries and indiscriminately murder people, you're going to create a backlash reciprocal violence. And it's a cycle of violence that's being profitably milked by some corrupt sadistic weapons manufacturer. But all of our media and all of our advertising and all of our social interaction is no longer pitched to the common sense mind. It's pitched to the subconscious mind, where the forces of violence and rape are lurking. The whole point of post medieval society, through the introduction of institutions of higher learning or higher purpose or religious thought, is to try to organize society in ways to avoid the debasement, the tendency to go toward that simple feeding of the darkness, to exist in some kind of mutually beneficial way. But that's completely being dismantled, because at the service of a medieval court of sadists who, you know, if you go back into Roman times, for example, you had emperors who would stage spectacles in the Colosseum of bestiality for the amusement of the mob. You would see men and women being horribly abused by animals. You know, this is, unfortunately, if you, even some of these TV shows, we just saw a show last week, that show of the motorcycle riders in some charming ville, Sons of Anarchy. They're staging acts of violence in that show that are so beyond, over the top, absurdly cruel and sadistic, that is now becoming normalized. You have to go back to ancient Roman times to see the mob being amused by such spectacles. I mean, I'm sure the next season we'll see one of the characters being brutally raped by a bear or some animal, and there'll be a little bit of an outcry like, oh, wow, that seemed a little over the top. But it's becoming completely normalized now, because the mob is being appeased with the bread and circuses of Red Nose Day comic relief, so that they can justify their mass murder.
Yeah, and well, just like the back in the Roman times, they, you know, you see it across America is much more, has had more years, though I think the UK is rapidly gaining, is of this sort of, you know, massaging of that inner beast, that inner emotional raw beast inside, where, you know, one thing that is stands out among Americans is that the voter can be counted on to demand, to insist, to vote for any politician. All they have to promise is some sort of violence. Let's lock up more children in adult prisons. They're really, you know, they may be 12, but they're like evil, dangerous little Black and Hispanic kids. We need to lock them up in more prisons. They can always get a voter, always to lock up more people, to take more rights from women. And it's a very, you know, thuggish beast in the Serengeti or something. You know, they're just raw beasts. And
yeah, well, like last week I saw a tweet fly by the Twitter stream that, oh, some high school somewhere there's a shooting.
Yeah.
Now, there's been so many high school shootings, so much tragedy, so many needless murders. I didn't even bother to look at it. I mean, that's been normalized now. The fact that, well, you know, kids commit mass murder at school these days. That's become a normalized activity in America today. That's the product of Edward Bernays types and Lucian Freud and the children of Freud and the children of Edward Bernays ruling the roost of psychopaths and functional financial illiterates like Russell Brand, imposing their stupidity on the masses to the point where they are justifying giving this program of the last meal to poor children before they get droned to death.
Yeah. And every single time there was a shooting yesterday in Colorado. Colorado, of course, is a big state for weapons manufacturing, by the way, just like those kids in Columbine you saw in Michael Moore's film. Their parents made those missiles. They made the cruise missiles that drop on those children in Africa and the Middle East. So, you know, there is a self-feeding mechanism there. But the other thing I noticed is that you see over and over these mass shootings over and over in school and how the propaganda works. All those people, right away, people come out and say, we're so free because we own these guns. We're so free. And yet you saw hundreds of children having to leave the school with their hands up in submission like slaves. Mm-hmm. So the just like the American will also tell you, we're so free in our car, sitting for 3 hours in a traffic jam that takes them 2 miles. Mm. And they're so free. Mm-hmm. But any outsider looking from, that aren't involved in the propaganda that took you to the place where you think you're free sitting in a traffic jam for 3 hours, that took you to the place where you think you're free with your hands up and having to crawl on your knees and capitulate to the police that you're not one of the shooters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so I think what I'm getting from this particular podcast is how the functioning rational mind has been subverted through the use of persuasion and subconscious and subliminal advertising used to be illegal, and I'm pretty sure that it's used in all its subtle forms on a regular basis. Everywhere you go, and the whole invasiveness I think this is where maybe the 1984 scenario has taken an interesting twist, in that it's not so much Big Brother watching you, although in Camden, New Jersey, clearly that's exactly what you have there, a dystopian nightmare. It's this marketing, the long arm of the marketer is just kind of reaching into your life and into your body in disturbing ways. You know, you can just feel the tentacles of Procter & Gamble in their squid-like appendages crawling up my sphincter, looking for ways to grab more money. And it has a really creepy sense that these big packaged goods companies and other types are strangling society to death. It's euthanasia by single portion detergent.
Well, this is another story that's just come out while we've been on air. IRA bomb in backpack targets Belfast nightlife. Wow. The Irish Republican Army diehards claimed responsibility Saturday for detonating a small bomb hidden in a backpack in the heart of Belfast's revived city center. Amateur footage showed the bomb detonate within 100 yards of cordoned off pedestrians in Belfast's cathedral quarter. The district of Cobblestone Street was a ghost town during decades of full-fledged IRA violence, and today is home to thriving pubs, nightclubs, boutique hotels, and a trendy art scene. The security alert disrupted shows at the nearby Metropolitan Arts venue and obliged some diners to take their plates with them to eat in the cold. Okay. They didn't put the plates down, but they went out and ate outside.
So what are we to make of this, that there's a resurgence?
No, it's the thing. These are the brilliance of you're talking about the inner beast, the inner, chimpanzee in many human males. And it's probably young guys who, whether they join the Crips or the Bloods or Al-Qaeda, just like to blow stuff up. And yeah, this is what they are. And yet we adopt our entire societies around building infrastructure and surveillance states to stop a guy from being what his instinct in nature, his primordial sort of goo inside him is.
Yeah. I mean, there is a way to avoid this by creating something called a civilization. But if you dismantle civilization, you go back to this type of thing. But on the political front, though, so yours is it just a crazy person who's painting themselves as a political statement, and there is no political component to this?
Well, they're saying that most IRA members from the dominant faction, the Provisionals, the Provies, would cease fire in 1997 and renounce violence in 2005 after killing nearly 1,800 people in a failed 27-year campaign. Obviously, they're not talking anything about the loyalists. But breakaway IRA factions remain determined to mount sporadic attacks in defiance of the British Territory's 1998 peace accord. Police statistics show a sharp rise in attempted bombing since October, capped by a failed car bomb attack on Belfast's glitziest new shopping center, the Glass Dome Victoria Square, on November 24th. Only the detonator of that 130-pound bomb exploded at the entrance to the mall's underground parking. I didn't even hear about this. There was a failed car bombing of a 130-pound bomb. When we were there in Belfast, I think it was in June for the G8 thing, mm-hmm. There was, remember, the locals were telling us that there had been the militias, the UDF militia, one of the loyalist militias, were stopping people. They were stopping cars. Like, they had checkpoints. So the militias were back and running checkpoints in the city.
Our trip to Belfast this year was interesting, and it's a very, very interesting part of the world, and the political struggles there are fascinating to me. And yeah. You know, they go back to pre 9/11. You know, you had the bombs that were going off here in the UK and in Northern Ireland, and this was a very, very hot. Guerrilla war for independence that dominated the public conversation in the U.S. and here, and it's hard to talk about because there's been for obvious reasons.
Well, we have to wrap up the show, but would note that the fact that we didn't even hear about that car bomb that failed to go off, that's a huge car bomb. If it had been placed by some Muslims, we would have heard about it. So I think that shows you that the elite, the people who run the media, the propagandists, don't want you to know about that because they want your attention focused on the protests in Kiev or the children dead in Syria. They have other plans on them. They don't want to waste any more time or money on Northern Ireland.
Yeah, no, the bomb was full of smiles. It was going to explode with red noses and spread love and joy.
Exactly. Well, that's it for this episode of Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM in London.
Bye, y'all.